Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Divs, and I'm joined by my awesome co-host Cassidy, as always.
Hello.
And today, we are continuing with our Marvel trend, but we're stepping back from Phase 5 because, duh, there's only one movie in Phase 5 out for now. But we are going back to Phase 4, and we are going to be discussing Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, which was a super exciting movie for so many reasons, considering the fact that it was introducing a brand new superhero into the MCU and his skill set, and so many questions opening up about how he fits into the broader Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, Cass, let's talk about it because this was a peak pandemic experience, if I'm not wrong. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say I think that was it was like right around, I think, the height of the pandemic. So
September
I think
2021, approximately, if I'm
I think
not
it did
wrong.
release in theaters, but I know I didn't see it in theaters because of the pandemic.
I
And I
did.
think also there was limited showings where I was. So
Oh,
like I
really?
don't think yeah, I think 'cause like I was very close to one of the COVID epicenters. So I think people like that had happened, and then I think people were understandably a little bit concerned
Oh,
about,
yeah.
I think, just reopening things at like full capacity. So they were doing like a lot of like limited run times and stuff. So I actually saw this one on streaming when it came to
Okay.
Disney Plus. And so that was a very different experience because I think that and Black Widow were like the first Marvel movies where I expected to go to the theaters and I was looking forward to seeing it on the big
Oh,
screen.
yeah.
Unfortunately, it didn't quite pan out. But it was really interesting because I think technically, I don't know if Shang-Chi is Marvel's first Asian superhero in the comics, but he's definitely on the big screen.
Yes.
They've never done an Asian superhero before, so that was very cool. And then also, I just didn't know a ton about him, and so I was just very
No.
intrigued to see what the story was about, what the character was like, what his backstory is, how they were going to connect it to existing events and tie him into existing characters' arcs and stuff like that. So that was really interesting to get to see that aspect of it. But as a movie, I think the kind of interesting thing about this is like if you want a specific movie to like dive into the MCU, this is like a good entry point. One
I
of a
would
couple,
say so.
because it's not really connected to too much until the end.
Yeah.
So I think unlike some other movies, you don't need to see all 3 million movies and TV shows that comes before this. But also, I think the interesting thing is there's been a couple movies that have kind of just like existed, like they don't really seem to tie into the general, I guess, phase or the theme of the phase or whatever. But the more we get, or like the further we get into phase both 4 and 5, and then like the closer we get to Avengers 5 and 6, the more hints they seem to be dropping. So I'm very curious to see where all of this leads and how Shang-Chi is going to come back.
Absolutely, because here's the thing, right? You're absolutely right in saying that this movie is just there, because up until the post-credits scene, you don't know how Shang-Chi is connected to the rest of the Marvel universe. It doesn't happen. Maybe there was one hint in the middle of the movie, but that was just it, and after that, it's just way at the end. But it was a really good and interesting story. And someone, I think you mentioned this because I think you said you saw this on Tumblr, that someone mentioned that the theme for Phase 4 was grief. And this movie is also very significant in showing that, because this deals with a different kind of grief and how grief can turn someone into something that they don't want to be. So let's talk about all of that, because I think this movie starts with a flashback, because they just mentioned that there was someone, this one person found the Ten Rings in the tomb, and he used it to basically amass or create an empire and amass an army and stuff like that. And I love Tony Leung. He played this character amazingly well. I want to talk about all of that. So let's get started with how they gave us the backstory for the Ten Rings as much as they knew, and how it ties into all of this.
Yeah, so in the beginning, we actually meet Shang-Chi's father first, and then we find out later that he's his father. But I think, yeah, the movie starts with Wenwu having already acquired the Ten Rings and then using it, like you said, to amass an empire. And I just thought that was kind of interesting because, again, I didn't know anything about the character of the story. Like from the comics, I don't know how accurate it was or how closely it followed it, but I just thought it was really interesting because you see him, like you said, literally build this empire from the ground up. And I mean, knowing Marvel and like knowing what they're doing, you kind of expect, like, okay, it's a superhero movie. He's probably going to find the rings and use it for good. But like the opening sequence is just this guy just. I don't want to say like brutally going around killing people with it, but kind of like he
He
does
kind
like
of
conquer.
does.
Yeah. And like he does amass a lot of power and become, it looks like a dictator, but you're not given a lot of time to figure out, or they don't show explicitly like what his ruling style is like. So I don't really know what he is specifically, but yeah, it's just really interesting that you get to see like that aspect of it, which is, it's not Shang-Chi having the rings already, it's his father, and how his father has kind of used it for his personal gain and built this empire. And he's gotten all these things, but kind of like the old saying goes, just because you have like a bunch of power doesn't necessarily mean you're happy, or it's not like, you know, that, like having power is like, it can be great, but it can also be overrated. And through the flashbacks, you kind of see that because Wenwu has all these things, doesn't have love.
And
So
he
the opening bit is
finds,
like, yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I think the same thing what you were going to say, like the opening bit is him having amassed that power and then realizing, like, oh no, it's not as great as it's cracked up to be. Or like, it's cool, but there's more that he wants, obviously.
Well, yes, in a way, but I think he meets his match with his future wife because when he meets her, he's still looking for more power. But when he sees her, or when she overpowers him pretty easily, he's like, okay, I don't think this is enough for me now. I think, and he does for a while end up, being being a husband and a father and all those things, because he up until a certain point he genuinely loves her, his family, and their kids. It's not like he regrets letting go of or putting those rings down or putting them away to just live a normal life. But his past seems to catch up with him, which we will find out in a little bit. But I do want to talk about Simu Liu, because he's been in a lot of TV shows before this, but this was, and I actually want to look talk about his little tweet at Marvel saying, "Hey, you're making Shang-Chi, I'm here," and then they actually cast him, probably after a grueling auditioning process, but it kind of happened. What did you think of that? Because that was kind of crazy.
I mean, I kind of loved it, but also like, hello, Marvel, I'm available. I have no acting skill, but like, stick me in the background, I'll do anything. No, I thought that was really cool because, like, I mean, obviously he's been in the business, so it's not like they just plucked him up out of nowhere. But I don't know, there's something about it that's just like, I thought that was very like neat that he tweeted, and I think he tweeted like a while ago, like it was
Yeah, when they,
announced, like,
yeah,
and it was a
yes.
development and it hadn't like officially been greenlit.
Yeah.
And then I think once it was greenlit, they were like, hey, you tweeted, like you asked for it, and
Yeah.
now here we're making this movie, come join us. So that was really cool. And I mean, I think he did a good job. Again, I don't really know a
Yeah,
lot
he
about the
did.
character, so I have like nothing to compare it to. I don't know how closely it follows the comics or how much it deviates from it, and if it's an accurate representation of what Shang-Chi was in the comics. But I liked the movie we got. I thought it was really interesting and obviously something Marvel hadn't done before, and it was just fun. I really liked it. Like, it was new, and I'm okay with movies just kind of like existing and like not tying into the larger Marvel canon, because Marvel for now has proven that like even if movies don't have a payoff right away, it'll pay off in the end. So
Oh,
I'm willing
God,
to trust the
yes.
formula for now, until they do something that like lets me down otherwise.
No, I don't think we have been let down by that just yet, but let's hope that trend continues. And I also want to talk about there is a cool comedy aspect to this because Sean is living by himself. And he basically, he's living in San Francisco, as Sean, basically. And he has a friend called Katie who he works with, and they're idiots, complete idiots. Let's talk about that because.
Yeah, I mean, it's I thought that like the way they kind of presented like how or like the way we meet Sean was very interesting, because like obviously you know that he has this connection to the Ten Rings, and it's like, well, how does this work? And then through the story like unraveling, you find out like unfortunately his mother gets murdered when he's very young, and then his dad just goes like,
On a rampage.
yeah, and then has his like very young son who's like, I mean, he was a teenager at the time, but that's still really young. He like tells Sean like, okay, as retribution, you're gonna go after the leader of the gang that killed your mom, and you're gonna kill him. And like, as a 14-year-old kid, like that's, I mean, as at any age, having to like do that is, I would imagine, very traumatic, and also not something that normal people do. But I don't know what century when we was living in. But yeah, I mean, after that happens, Sean, or he changes his name to Sean and he runs away to the States, and he's living in San Francisco, and then he's working as a valet, which I kind of love, because I feel like, I mean, I don't know if any other Asians felt like it, but I was like, yeah, defy the stereotype of like having to be in some like STEM field or like a like lawyer or something. I mean, just be whatever you want as long as you're happy and it's not hurting anybody and all of that. But I thought that was really funny. But Sean and Katie have a really funny dynamic, and I absolutely loved the, like watching them, because it was chaotic from the start. Like, there
Oh,
was
God,
no
yes.
easing into it. It's like the opening sequence, you meet them, their valet's at like a hotel, and some dude drops off his fancy car, and Katie's like first reaction is
Calls
like to
in
take it for a
dibs.
joyride.
Yeah, basically.
But my question is like, how did the guy not know? Because that car was like flashy and loud, and it seems like he wouldn't have gotten very far into the hotel before he just heard like the engine going. But no, the opening sequence was so funny, because like you literally just meet them, and immediately Katie is like, "We're going for a joyride, hop in." And the whole time Sean is like sitting in the passenger seat screaming like, "Slow down."
But to Katie's credit, she didn't scratch the car,
She did
to
not.
her
No, that was
credit.
very good driving. But like, if that had been me in the passenger seat, I would have
I'd be
been
dead.
like,
I'd
yeah.
be dead, like of a heart attack, but I know
I
what
know.
you mean. Oh, God. But yeah, they have a good friendship, and like you said, it's pretty chaotic, but then they do a lot of they do everything together. They've known each other since they were teenagers, and basically they've known each other for 10 years now, and basically they've been friends ever since, and they I think they have a lot of history together. And it's kind of funny that they're just sitting around minding their own business when why and you again, I like the fact that they're just living a middle class life, like using public transit, not having a fancy car of their own and stuff like that. But then they're on this bus and some weirdo guy comes in and attacks him and says asks him to give him his pendant. And cue one of the coolest fight sequence I've seen. in a Marvel movie. I have to say it. That was pretty cool. Let's talk about that because I loved it. It was so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I think like a lot of Marvel movies, this one kind of just jumps straight into the action. And the fight scenes are always choreographed really well, in my opinion. But I'm not a choreographer. I'm not
No.
like a fight scene nerd. So I don't really know what constitutes a good one or a bad one. I just know most of the times I tend to enjoy them in
It's
Marvel
fun.
movies just because I feel like, yeah, they're fun and like they're just interesting. And there's always like, I think, a humorous element to them. And this is no different because they're literally on a bus when, like you said, this guy with a machete for an arm just randomly attacks them, like seemingly out of nowhere. And for anybody being attacked would be like one thing. But for Sean, it's like he doesn't really know why he's being attacked. But I think one of my favorite parts about this was like when the guys were like the goons are attacking Sean, Katie's like in the background screaming, does he look like he can fight? And like the rest of the sequence is like Sean proceeding to fight and actually holding his own and doing pretty well, all things considered. And Katie doesn't know anything about his past, so I think
No.
getting this kind of like weird glimpse into it was a lot for her, but it was very
It was.
interesting watching her reaction and then watching the two of them kind of, because like they're on a public bus and they're being attacked by like a number of goons. It's a confined space. It's San Francisco. Like the landscape is hilly, so they're probably going up and down hills. And the bus driver is,
Out for the count, knocked
yeah.
out.
So Katie has to take over, which is really interesting. But I don't know, there's so many fun things about it. Also, I think his name is Clev. He's like the guy videotaping
Oh
the
God,
fight
he
scene. He was in
yes,
Homecoming
he
and
was.
he was in something else too, I think. I'm
I
blanking
can't
on it.
remember, but all right, Spider-Man, do a flip. That was that guy. That was him.
But like I just thought that was so cool, and I just love that it was such a minor thing in Homecoming, and it's like a minor thing here too. Like he's a background character, doesn't have a ton of screen time or lines, but I just thought it was really funny and neat that Marvel kind of kept that continuity
Oh,
that
and
this guy
this,
had been in Homecoming and
yes.
in New York. Now he's in San Francisco and he's like live streaming the fight, and he's like, all right, I'm gonna break it down for you. And I'm like, oh my God, that's such a like, I don't know, like
Oh, and his comedy is fun too. It's like, bus driver's out. I'm not gonna take responsibility for this because every time I try to take responsibility for stuff like this, I get yelled at. So, no, I'm not doing this. It was so funny. Like, oh my
yeah. Again, just like a really, really tiny part, but it was like I thought it's still really funny, and I just like the continuity aspect of it. Although I do wonder how he was in New York. I mean, they're obviously homecoming in this movie, like years apart, but like he was in New York then. Now he's in San Francisco. I was like, did he move? Are we just gonna see him in all the movies? I think that'd be like a really funny running gag just to see him in
It
like the background of like as many movies as possible.
would be. I absolutely agree. Now, let's talk about this is what kickstarts everything because these guys do get the pendant, which means that Sean now has to, do something about it. His only clue is that it is a little letter from his sister or postcard that he got from his sister. And Katie's like shocked at all of this because she doesn't know about any of this. She didn't know he had a sister. She didn't know he she didn't know what he'd been trained in or did for a living up until he just disappeared in terms of his father, basically. And this is when he actually tells her about it. And I love the fact that she's so insistent. She's like, I'm coming with you. Whatever you're dealing with, I'm in it too now, so we're gonna deal with this kind of thing. It's kind of sweet. And they
Yeah,
end
it's
up going
wholesome.
to, it is wholesome. And they end up going to Macau to find Xuza Ling, who is his sister. I want to talk about that because again, hilarity ensues here because it turns out that Xuza Ling is running a fight an underground fighting ring. Successfully. And this is where we get the first connecting glimpse of how this might be tied into the rest of the MCU because you see Wong fighting the Abomination for I don't know I'm not sure why, but I guess it's his way of letting off steam, I guess. Let's talk about that because that was crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting to see him, because when was the last time we saw him? Probably Endgame, right?
I think so.
Yeah, you have we I don't think we'd seen Wong since then, and we certainly hadn't seen the Abomination in a hot minute.
No.
So it was really cool to see them back on the screen, like big screen, but also just like the like having them together in a scene and like fighting each other. I thought that part was interesting because you don't really understand why until phase four, or later in phase
Yes.
four, until She-Hulk comes out.
Yeah.
And then there's like a little kind of connection there. But in this movie, it was very, I thought, interesting at first just to see them together, because that was not like a like scenario I would have ever imagined see where Wong is fighting the Abomination. But they are in this underground fight ring, and Shaun's sister is there as well. She's a total badass. I
Oh God,
love her.
yes.
Yeah, it's just like a very different environment, obviously, than the environment Shaun lived in. Yeah, watching them like do like the, what do you call it? I'm not describing this very well, but like watching Shaun and Katie like come into the fight ring and take it all in was very entertaining. And then meeting I forget his name. What's the name of the guy that's like showing them through? He's
I can't
like an
remember him.
MC.
Yeah, he's running the whole thing for Su Xiaoling, basically. She
Yeah.
I don't know how I don't know.
Yeah, I forget his name, but like he is like explaining all this stuff to them, and he's like, "Oh, bus guy." And like Sean is like on the internet and he's trending and they want him to fight, and he's like, "I'm not gonna fight." And then of course, like the next scene you see is Sean like prepped to fight. And of course he has to fight his sister, which also makes it entertaining.
It does because all it, because the minute she's the minute he sees that he's fighting his sister, he keeps pleading with her, dude, I don't want to fight you. We can't, we don't need to do this. But she's just like, she doesn't care. And she literally and then she basically knocks him out while saying, you should have stayed home. And
Yeah, I
basically,
always like, I wasn't sure if it wasn't so much that she didn't care, or if she was just like keeping up appearances and she's like, I can't obviously like say anything or.
not that, that I think it's a mix of both, and I'll tell you why. Because, and she explains this, because when she was little, she adored her big brother. That like after her mom, after their mom died, they were each other's support system, basically, because their dad was like out there basically just exacting revenge, and these two only had each other. But then he got sent off on this mission to find his mother's killer, and he promised his younger sister, hey, I'll be back and we'll get out of here together, kind of deal. But the problem is, he didn't come back. He disappeared, and she's bitter about that because, I mean, of course, she probably still loves her brother, but she's mad at him, and rightfully so. What do you think of all of
Yeah.
that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the anger and the bitterness is certainly justified, because I think there was a bit too, like after their mother dies, that like when Wenwu's, he wants to train Sean and have him obviously get revenge for the killing, which I can understand like the sentiment behind it, but training a kid to be a killer is not recommended and just not a
No.
thing, again, that normal people do. But I guess Wenwu's not the average guy. There was also a thing I think where he, I don't know if it was just Xiaoling or if it was all the women, where he just like forbid them from like having any sort of training or whatever. So she had to train in secret, and the only reason she's good as she is now is because like she trained in secret and like she honed her skills and like she kept doing it until she was obviously where she is when we see her. Whereas I think Sean, like he had been skilled enough when he was younger, and then you know after a while he kind of like left that lifestyle behind him, so it's not that he's not skilled, he just I think at least against her he was a little rusty because he hadn't been using those
Against
skills in
her,
a very long
yes.
time. So yeah, but no, I mean I think bitterness is justified, and like she's completely valid in feeling that, because like you said, I think she definitely looked up to Sean, and it seemed like they were kind of close, at least
They
before
were.
their mom died and before he was kind of given this crazy task of getting revenge on her behalf. And then especially once Sean left, I'm sure that must have been really devastating and very difficult for her to kind of adjust to, like the realization that, hey, my big brother is not coming back. And so yeah, I think that part is definitely, like, I can understand that, but I always viewed it as like her fighting Sean was like, she's not super thrilled to see him, but she's also like not super upset either. But for the sake of keeping up appearances, she fight and be like who she normally is to these people. So like that's the reason she just, that's what I thought anyway. Like that's the impression that I got, that she like finished the fight and it was all like very businesslike because that was the image she had to project. And then once they're kind of sort of in private or away from the crowds, then she can like feel a little bit more open and I guess express more of her anger and resentment.
That's true. Let's also talk about, basically they do manage to talk, and she's just like, "Why are you here?" And Sean tells her that they got my pendant and now they're coming after you. And basically he shows her the postcard that he says she sent him, and she's like, "I didn't send this." And that's when they get attacked by their father's goons again. But before they do, Katie and Giselle have kind of a moment. It's a stupid moment, but it's fun, basically. They're like, "Hey, you're cool. You're such a badass, and I love you." And Giselle is like, "I like your pants." Like, okay, fine, fine. But they are attacked by them, and again, hilarity ensues because they do manage to overpower them, and Shang-Chi is just trying to interrogate one of them, what does my dad want, kind of thing. And Zhu Xiaoling just kicks him off the what would you call it, the
Like a
scaffolding.
scaffolding, yeah.
He kicks him off and asks this guy, "Did America make you soft?" They're like,
There was that, and then also there's that bit like in the beginning of the movie, I think Sean and Katie are at like a bar with like old
of old
acquaintances
friends.
or whatever, and like they're describing how they met, and Katie says she used stupidity to like confuse a bully who was picking on Sean and started singing Hotel California, and
She tries this
yeah,
now.
then she tries the same move with like Wen Wu's goons or whatever, and that scene, it was like again a really small thing, a very very short scene, but it cracked me up because it's literally like they're in Macau, they're on the scaffolding hundreds of feet up or thousands of feet up in the air, who knows, it's a very long drop down and there's a guy with like weapons pointed at her, and Katie is just like bursting into song and starts singing Hotel California, and I mean it works, it's an effective method.
Because it
The guy
shocks
was
the
just
guy,
like,
like, what the
he was just
heck?
like, what is going on right now?
Oh my God. But yeah, but here's the thing. But Wenwu does manage to get to them. And again, Wenwu's, I wouldn't call him an enigma, but, and I don't know if he's hard to pin down, because it's not that he doesn't love his kids. He does love them. He does. But I think losing his wife basically just
I think it
changed
broke
him.
something in him.
It pretty much did. So let's talk about that, because he has a plan. And it's a shocking plan. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, at least with regard to him capturing his kids, it's a very weird thing because he's like, he does capture them, but then he's like, he takes them back to his compound and he's like trying to, I think, be paternal or like do the parental
Like
thing and
feed
like,
them and stuff, like
yeah, and it's like,
basically.
it's very weird. And I think they all feel that because obviously, like, Sean hasn't seen him for, I don't know, at least a decade, if not more. And like, obviously, like he hasn't really been keeping in touch with either of his kids, and he's never met Katie. Katie doesn't know anything about him. And I thought it was really interesting that like the one of the first things she asks is like, "Is he gonna kill us?" And then Xiaoling is like, "No, just keep your head down and don't say anything, and he'll ignore you. That's how I survived." And it's like, that's kind of bleak, and like, that's
It
not like, I mean, that's not fair to her, obviously, but because
No.
she shouldn't have had to do that. But obviously, when he was going through some things, so I guess maybe that was a safer option that she was ignored, just given everything else he was getting into and the stuff he was planning. But yeah, I think like the interesting thing was like watching them kind of get used to his compound and like this weird world that he's a part of, because he's like at the head of this, and I don't really think any of them have really, like, they don't really know what's going on,
No.
and they don't really know what he's doing. But it was interesting because during one of their conversations, he references a character that we've seen before, the
In Iron
Mandarin
Man
from Iron Man
Three,
3, which
yes.
is a callback to a much older movie in phase, what was it, phase one, phase two? I don't even know. But I thought that was really interesting that, like, even from such an old movie, or older movie anyway, that there's like this element of continuity and they're still referencing things that happen even in older movies. So
That was pretty cool. I did enjoy that. And was that Ben Kingsley?
yes, as Trevor
As the as
or the
Trevor,
Mandarin. Yeah.
yeah. Again, really cool that they referenced that. And he makes a very good point. They basically that America basically created a terrorist with the name of a chicken dish, and it still worked, ridiculously enough. And
Yeah.
he says something interesting. He said, "Names have power." And my wife was the only one who called me by my name. And ever since she died, no one's ever called me that. It kind of shows, this is where the grief thing comes in, right? Because he's, again, I'm not saying he's a good person, but he is troubled in the sense that he wasn't a good person for a long time, but then he did find something to be good for, which was his
Right.
wife and his kids. And then he lost his wife, and that basically broke him in a weird way. So that's, and again, props to Tony Leung for playing him that well. I'm being really honest. He did a really
Yeah, no,
good
he did
job
a
of
great
that.
job. Like, he is kind of intimidating when you see him as Wenwu. Like, you could, I think, at least for me, not knowing a lot about the character and like not
No,
knowing the
exactly.
character's backstory
Same.
and like what the Ten Rings really meant. At first, it's like, okay, it's just a guy with a bunch of bracelets, and then you see their power, and then it's like, oh, okay, these things are
No,
like,
and his
they're
presence.
powerful. Yeah.
His presence. He did a really good job of the, it's not that, again, when he was with his wife, he was laughing and smiling, and he knew how to be that person. But then when he's asserting his authority, he's like, this is me you're talking to. You can tell that he can be intimidating. So I really love that. And I want to talk about his weird plan, because he says he hears his wife's voice, and he says that she was trapped in Ta Lo, which was her home, which is again a mystical place that no one really knows about. And he has
It's
a
definitely
plan.
like, yeah, it's definitely like a kind of weird plan, just given that like his wife died, and then he tells Sean, okay, you're gonna avenge her death, but then he's like, okay, just kidding, maybe she's not dead because I hear her voice. Or maybe it's not so much that he even realizes like the absurdity of what he's asked Sean to do and then what he's now saying. But yeah, that part was, I thought, really interesting, because it's like, you told your son to go kill people to avenge her death, so at some point you believed she was dead, but now you're saying you can hear her.
Yeah, like what is that, man? Like what is it? Which one is it now? That's what it, but again, grief can do this to people, I feel like, you know? Because I think he wanted so badly to believe that yes, she's okay, she's out there, and there is something I can do to get her back, that he's ready to do this. I think that is what makes this really sad for me, unfortunately. But and when Shang-Chi and Zhu Xueling are like, "You're crazy for doing this. Why are you doing this?" He just basically locks them up and tries to go ahead anyway because he has what he needs. The pendants reveals a map, literally, for them to get to Ta Lo, and that's all he needs. And he locks them up so that they don't interfere, and he makes plans to get out of there at dawn to start his search for that place and get in there, basically. But while they're locked up, they do meet somebody special, and interesting, who, and they do have to, they, and now they know that they have to get there before their father does. Otherwise, it's gonna be really bad. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, so surprisingly enough, they meet Trevor Slattery, the Mandarin
Yes.
himself, who's obviously, like, we know he was just like an actor that some like group just propped up as like a pretend terrorist and used him to cause chaos. But I think he says that when Wu and his like goons were so entertained by him that they just like kept him prisoner and had him like perform kind of as like
Perform.
a court jester type thing. And he has like a weird fantastical sort of pet named Morris that's like proof that
Which
something
is the cutest thing
like
ever.
he's really cute, but I think it's also proof that like Talo is a real place, and I think that
Yes.
kind of spurs them into action because now they're all like, all right, well, we need to get there before Wen Wu does, and we need to stop him ASAP because there's a lot, obviously a lot at stake, but also Wen Wu is kind of a little crazy if he thinks he can just waltz in somewhere and destroy a village because he thinks he hears his dead wife's voice.
Absolutely. So now they're in a race against not just time, but also against their dad, because their dad, in their escape attempt, their dad discovered that they left. And their dad isn't someone to be trifled with exactly, but they learn from the map that they have to time this exactly right, otherwise they'd never find Talo, basically. And it is quite a mess, but they do manage to make it to Talo. And I want to talk about it gave me Princess Mononoke vibes, to be honest with
Yeah,
you, right?
I can see that.
Yeah, because of the cool creatures, and especially the, I think there was one creature in particular that looked like the forest spirit to me, if I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
So that was a bit, I was like, wow, this is like some Princess Mononoke kind of shit. So I was like, yeah, okay, that's pretty cool.
I think, yeah, when they get into Talo the first time, there's like a weird horse-like creature that kind of gives the forest spirit vibes from Princess Mononoke. But a lot of the creatures are just very fantastical, and it's a very different world, I think, than anything Marvel had done before. So it was cool to see like all these new creatures that we had never seen before in the MCU, besides maybe like weird alien looking things from some of the earlier movies. But yeah, the creatures were all super interesting, and I would love to like learn more about them. I don't know if they were given names or anything, like in an art book or something, but I think it would be really cool to learn more about them, and like even a mini series or something just about those creatures, or even like just Talo in general. I think it would
That would
make
be
like a
really
cute like
cool.
little TV show or something, but Marvel has a lot going on, so they probably don't need extra stuff added to their plate.
Not yet, but I would like to see some of those things.
Yeah,
But
eventually.
absolutely. But who they do meet is incredible. And okay, I have to say this. I love Michelle Yeoh. She's a legend. Like, oh my God,
She's
she's so
amazing.
cool. So, and the fact that they got her to play this role is actually fitting because she's okay. I don't care how much Simu Liu has trained for this, but that woman has been at it for years, years, and it's incredible. It's incredible, right? Like, I've seen her do Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and then she was also in, I think she was also in Tomorrow Never Dies, a James Bond movie, but that was pretty cool. And a lot of other cool things, and more recently in Everything Everywhere All at Once. I'm yet to watch that movie, but I've heard really cool things about it.
Yeah, I mean, she's winning like all the awards for it, and I'm so happy for her because she's an amazing actress.
Oh,
And
yes.
I remember watching Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon when I was like a lot younger, and I don't think I followed a lot of the movie, but I loved her character. There was just something so captivating about it, and
About
I thought it
her, to
was.
be honest, she's amazing. Oh my God.
It was probably her, to be honest, because I saw that movie when I was a lot younger, and I don't think I quite followed the plot, but the action was really cool, and I thought the title was really cool, and I just loved her character, and I wanted to be her for like Halloween or something.
I
It didn't
can
happen, unfortunately,
understand
but
why. She's pretty cool.
yeah, but like I loved that movie, and that might be the only thing of hers I've actually seen other than this movie, but I've heard Everything Everywhere All at Once is amazing, and I've yet to watch it too, but it's on my list of things to watch, and I'm
Same.
very excited to see it. But she's having her moment right now, and I'm just so happy because she's
Yes.
amazing, and just give her all the awards. Like,
Please
I
do.
don't care if she's not even acted in it, just give her all the awards.
Yeah, she's amazing. So I'm glad that they roped her in for this role because she is incredible, especially as a mentor and a teacher and their aunt. It's incredible. There's just, again, there's just something about her. Like, I can't explain it. She's just really cool. Okay. That's the thing. But this is where things get complicated because these kids tell her that, hey, our dad's coming here because he thinks he hears our mom's voice. And apparently she's here and asking to be released. And this is when we get more into the lore of Talo and how this could be a multiversal thing. Let's talk about that because I think the setup for it is really cool and it's unlike anything we've seen before. But I want to talk about that. So let's talk about it because I think it's really cool how they set it up, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I think we already mentioned a little bit that Talo is like fantastical, and it's,
Yeah,
I think,
it's an
unlike any.
in-between thing, I think.
Yeah, I think it's definitely unlike any sort of setting or location that Marvel had explored up until that point. And now that they're getting into a multiverse saga, obviously. There's doors being opened to all sorts of other interesting and fantastical locations, whether it's the quantum realm or different universes within the multiverse or whatever it is. But this one was, I think, like you said, there was a part of it that kind of felt Ghibli-esque almost, in that
Right?
like some of the designs of the characters definitely felt like something out of a Ghibli movie, which I really enjoyed because I
Oh,
love
yeah.
Ghibli movies.
Yes.
But also, I mean, just the idea that there's like this hidden magical world that's existing in our world, but that's kind of closed off, and you have to have like certain, I guess, skills and or have certain things in your possession to get to it was really interesting, because it's almost like, this might not be a good comparison, but it almost kind of felt like camaraderie, in the sense that it was like,
A
that's
little
like for
bit.
sorcerers and stuff. And like, obviously, you know, you have to have done certain things, or you have to be a sorcerer of the mystic arts or whatever to access that, or like to get there. But Talo kind of felt like a little bit like that too, because you have to have, or at least in Wenwu's case, to get there, he needed both of his kids' pendants from their necklace that was given by their mother. And I think he thought like there were certain things he needed to do, like he had to go at a certain time or whatever to get there, which was partially true, but there were other ways of getting in that he didn't know.
He
But
didn't know.
yeah, I mean, I just think it was a really cool setup, and it was really cool to see the world, or that little kind of pocket of it, because there's a lot more. It felt like more of like a fantasy sort of setting than any of the locations the MCU previously felt. I think most of the other locations were kind of leaning towards more sci-fi type things, but this definitely felt almost something out
Mystical.
of like, out of like a Tolkien book or something. It was very like Ghibli-esque and Lord of the Rings-esque in a way, just in terms of like the creatures that you saw and the way the village of Talo was kind of built and all of that. So
No, I agree. But let's talk about the lore here, because I think they built Talo in to protect themselves, basically, because a creature, a multiversal creature called the Dweller in Darkness, had been, eliminating their people, and they managed to contain it, and they built this little pocket to exist in to seal that gate and keep the Dweller in Darkness away or locked away so that he doesn't exactly, attack them again and basically doesn't get unleashed upon this universe or any other universe at this point, right? But the thing is that the Dweller in Darkness has the option, has the power to reach out to you, make you think that you're actually hearing someone that you really care about to do what it wants. And that's what's happening to Wenwu here. And it's kind of sad because, again, Wenwu is a complicated person. He, not to say that he was ever good, because he's done terrible things and it caught up with him, which ruined any chance of a good life that he actually had when his wife and when his wife was alive, and when he was just okay with being a husband and a father for a little bit. But
I
now
think,
he's like, he wants to get that back. Yeah, go ahead.
yeah, no, I was just gonna, I think, like, at the very least, even if you don't agree with what he's done, you can kind of feel some sympathy for him
Yes, exactly.
because I think you understand where he's coming from in trying to get his wife back. And there's also sort of like this magical element to it, right? Where it's like the Dweller in Darkness has kind of been influencing him and made him feel like he's hearing his dead wife's voice. And maybe some part of him knows that his wife is dead and he's not getting her back. But I think
He
it's
wants to
like
believe that so much.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's like, he's desperate or he's kind of willfully ignoring everything just because this sort of like reality is better than anything else where he could potentially get his wife back. And all he has to do is like open some big fancy gate and destroy a village and he can have her back. And so I think like that aspect of it, I think you can kind of, as viewers, you can kind of sympathize with him and understand why he wants to
Yes,
do that,
yes,
but then
yes.
also knowing like the full picture or more of the story at least, I think we as viewers realize that like that's not he thinks he's doing one thing, but the reality of is he's doing something that could potentially destroy not just Talo and the surrounding areas, but could have cascading consequences for the rest of the world. And I don't think he realizes that just yet.
Absolutely. So they know that their dad's attack is imminent, but, and in the meantime, they have to prepare, which is, I think, what is the material that they use there for their outfits and their
Dragon
weapons?
scales. Dragon scales, I think, because there's I think the first time the Dweller in Darkness attacked, the villagers of Talo fought with a giant dragon called the Great
Mystical
Protector.
dragon, yeah, their great
Yeah, and
protector.
I think they used scales from the Great Protector and or maybe other dragons or just dragon scales somehow that they found lying around to like I
Build weapons and
guess,
armor, basically, for sure. So that's exactly so, and I love how I can't even remember Michelle Yeoh's character's name, but I just remember Michelle Yeoh.
Ying Nan, I think is her name.
Right. So I love how Ying Nan is a good mentor here, that she's the one teaching Shang-Chi and Xu Xiaoling that, hey, you've been taught to fight a completely different way, but if you want to defeat your father, you need to fight like we do and like your mother did, because she was the only one that was ever able to beat him. And again, some pretty cool training sequences, to be honest, but I think nothing would have prepared them for that full-blown assault. Especially when Wu basically comes in with his army and then goes for the gate right off the bat. That's intense. So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on, and especially once you know that on the other side of that gate is a multiversal monster that could potentially wreak havoc on the world. It's like, I think we as viewers are like, whoa, Wenwu, hang on a minute. Don't be so brash. But obviously he doesn't know that, or he doesn't see that, and for him it's just, my wife is on the other side, I have to do this. And he's it's almost like he's under the influence of, you could say, like a
He
spell
is.
or whatever, and he's kind of ignoring everything else, ignoring logic and reason and all of that, and just single-handedly focusing on opening this gate. And I mean, A for effort. I don't know what else to say, because like he does get it open for a little bit. Like there's a brief sort of fight between him and Sean, and
Sean.
he overpowers Sean, and he goes to open the gate, and they don't get it open fully just yet, but open enough that, you know, some of like the smaller creatures from the other side can get through. And it makes for a really interesting fight scene, just because I think there's like, obviously Xiaoling and Sean are obviously more versed in combat than somebody like Katie, and she's only been given, what, not even 24 hours, I think,
I don't know. It's
to train.
very less time.
But yeah, she doesn't have a lot of time, but even with what little time she has, she can do some stuff, which is like, if I was in that situation, I wouldn't even be able to like knock a bow and arrow together. Like it'd just be like, it would flop, it would not be great. But she's able to do at least that, which I thought was kind of cool. And it was also really interesting to see Trevor kind of just,
Be there.
I don't want to say, yeah, he was there. He didn't really join the fray, but he has like this one really funny bit where during the attack, he's just like lying on the ground, and then Morris comes over and starts nudging him, and he's like, "I'm playing dead meat." It's like, okay.
Was
I don't know why
pretty.
I found that so funny. I
It
just,
was funny, yeah.
yeah, it was kind of dumb, but it was like, yeah, nobody ever thought of that in one of the movies before, to just play dead and maybe the monsters will leave you alone. But I mean, he was the first one that tried, so I don't know, I got a kick out of that. But yeah, it was just like watching, I think, 'cause like you see in the beginning, you see isn't Wenwu's wife, her name is Li, right? I always forget.
I
I
think
think her
so,
name is
Ling.
Li.
Lee or Ling, I can't remember exactly.
For some reason, I my mind was like Li. I hope that's correct. But like you see her, like her fight sequence the first time with Wenwu was really cool,
It
because it was
was.
obviously like he was coming at it from, I think, one style, and she had a completely different style, but it was just really cool to see them kind of fight each other. And then to see a recreation of that at like the end with like the villagers of Talo and then Wenwu and his army, and then to see the kind of recreation of that fight play out between father and son was also really kind of
It was,
interesting. And
because it was really cool that that he was that sh that Shang-Chi was able to take control of some of the rings and go blow for blow with his dad for a little bit, but
yeah, I think it's like, 'cause the way they choreographed it, or like the way they did the VFX for it, was really neat in that it starts with like Wenwu having all 10 rings, and then as the fight progresses, gradually he loses more and more rings until in the end, Shang-Chi has all of them. Or, well, actually,
He
no, he doesn't
has
have all of them.
five
I
of
think,
them. He
yeah, he
has
has five of
like
them. So it's
five
like,
of them.
Yes, but like the way they like animated that, and I think Shang-Chi's are like orange and then Wenwu's are blue, and so when they fight, it's such like orange and blue, and you can kind of see almost like a breakdown of whose rings are doing what.
I have to say, I hate to bring a little bit of ATLA into this, but it reminds me of Zuko and Azula's Acme Kai a little bit.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, the colors and like the just the way that it was like animated and the way it came together.
No more ATLA talk from us, guys. Seriously, no more. We're not gonna do this anyway. But yeah, but there is this really sad moment because Wenwu has broken through enough of the gate's defenses for the Dweller in Darkness to actually come out. And in that moment, Wenwu looks at his son and he's like, yeah, I don't care. I see what I've done. Take the rings, do what you have to do. And he gives himself up. And it's kind of sad because, again, you can see how much he does love his kids. His family, that's what he wanted. And then that was taken from him, and he didn't handle that well. So, like you said, he's not exactly, we can't exactly agree with everything he's done or most of what he's done, but we can see where he's coming from.
Yeah, I think what also makes it kind of interesting is that technically, when Wenwu sort of sacrifices himself, that allows Shang-Chi to kind of live. And it's like during the fight, I think there's a bit where Shang-Chi kind of gets like knocked into the lake near Talo, and he's rescued by the Great Protector. And once the Dweller in Darkness actually breaks through, and like the fighting begins in earnest, I guess there's a bit where it seems like Shang-Chi might not like have the upper hand, and he might not be able to come out on top or whatever you want to call it. And then I think
And the
in
Dweller in Darkness is trying to take the Great Protector's essence or something like that.
yeah, and I think kind of as a last resort to finally, I don't want to say make up or atone for what he's done wrong, but I think just to do, to quote another show, to do one good
One
thing.
good thing in his life.
I think
How did I know you were going to say that? How did I know this?
because I have an unhealthy obsession with where that quote, the show that quote
Both
came
of
from.
us do. I know, dude. That's for another time altogether. We can't rant about that just yet. But I know what you mean. Let's go. He
But I don't know, the quote
wanted to do
fits, but also
one good
like,
thing in his life. He did it for them.
Yeah, which is, I mean, like, again, I think as viewers, it's really hard to agree with what Wenwu did over the course of his life, but and not that this one act kind of absolves him of
Absolves
all the
him.
other stuff, but I think it was something. I guess
It
it
was
counts for
something.
something because he
It was
sacrificed
for his
himself,
kids.
so yeah, so his kids could have a fighting chance, and boy, did they need it. Not necessarily a sacrifice, but in his sacrifice, he transfers power of the rings to Shang-Chi, so now he
Two,
has control of the 10 rings. That part, I think it helped
It
even
hits.
the odds a little bit. And yeah, you do, I think there was like some emotional impact from that scene, because again, I think, like you said, I don't think you ever quite agree with what Wenwu is doing, or you never can say he's good, but this one act is like, okay, I think at least he realized at the end that maybe everything he'd been fighting for wasn't really what he should have been doing, because he had a family. I mean, he had a great wife, he had two great kids, and it was extremely unfortunate and I'm sure devastating and heartbreaking that he lost his wife in the brutal way that he did. But I mean, in her honor, or whatever, he could have carried on living the way that she had taught him to live, but instead he kind of reverted back to his old ways, just became cold and distant and ruthless. And I think maybe it's a stretch, but in some ways it's almost like going back to his old ways is what got him in this predicament, where ultimately he had to sacrifice himself. So
Not that much of a stretch, but kind of. Yeah, I get what you mean, though. Definitely. But this is the fun, even in this kind of a dire situation, they managed to bring some levity because that the Dweller in Darkness is literally taking the Great Protector's essence, but Katie takes her shot, literally, allowing Shang-Chi to use the rings to dispatch the Dweller in Darkness from where he came, wherever that might be. Using the 10 rings. That was a pretty cool scene, not gonna lie. That was pretty cool. And there
I
was
mean, like,
another. Go ahead. Sorry.
no, I was just gonna say, like, I mean, we mentioned it briefly before, but it's like if we were in that situation, we would not have
Oh,
done
no.
half as good of a job as Katie did.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so cool that I don't think she's ever done archery, but she took it up very quickly. And in the span of a few hours, it seems she was confident, or maybe not, maybe confident is not the right words, but she was definitely competent enough to like hold her own for a bit.
Oh, she
And that
is.
was really cool. But yeah, I think it was just so funny that she spends so much of the movie being like kind of unsure about what she can do or if she should do it or whatever. And then, like she says, when she was in that moment, she just heard a voice that was telling her, like, take the shot, and she takes it and it
It
works. And it's like,
works.
yeah, you can do it. I mean, just believe in yourself, I guess. I don't know.
And the other cool thing is, I love this other because, again, Shang-Chi and Xu Xiaoling, again, siblings are complicated, even at the best of times, okay? But during this fight, there was a time when Shang-Chi was like, I'm not gonna let go of you, not again. I made that mistake once and I won't do it again. But then I love that because again it was probably hard on not probably it was definitely hard on both of them to let go of each other because they were the only support system the other had and now they have a chance to reconnect and he's the big brother he doesn't want to do that again but Xu Xiaoling is capable enough on her own, and she's like, "You have to do this. You can let me go. It's okay. I get it. Do what you have to do." And again, in a weird sort of way, they make up kind of thing. It's not the same, but it's definitely not as bad as it was when they met like a few days ago, I guess.
Yeah.
So that's an improvement, but. Thankfully, they win this fight, and weirdly enough, they have to go back to their normal life now. But what, how much of it is normal if Wong shows up through a portal when you're having dinner with friends? Let's talk about that.
Yeah. I just love one. I love that it was like the same friends and they're telling the story in the most casual way. Like,
Yeah.
yeah, we just went to like this fantastical realm, and then Sean's auntie taught me how to like use a bow and arrow, and we fought these giant beasts and this evil
Mythical
soul sucking thing.
creatures, yeah.
Yeah. And then their friends are just like, okay, now you're mocking us. And then
Yeah.
Sean and Kate are like, no, like this really happened. And then midway through, Wong just pops up and he's like, he's just in this bar, like, Shang-Chi, is Shang-Chi here? And then Sean's like,
Come with me.
present?
Hey, present. Come with
And
me.
then, yeah, like, they're literally like whisked, like, both of them, like, he takes Katie too, and then they're just taken into wherever, into the portal. And then there's a really cool scene where Sean
Yes.
gets to meet through like hologram or whatever on cool conference call type thing. He
Bruce
meets
Banner and
Bruce
Carol
Banner,
Danvers.
Carol Danvers.
I love
And
her. Sorry.
yeah, that scene was so funny where she's like in the middle of something. She's like, okay, I something came up, I gotta go. Bruce has my number, he'll give it to you. It was great
And
meeting you. I'll see you guys later.
Bruce is just like, I don't have her number.
But it does, like, Carol was in the like in the 90s, like she had a pager.
Yeah.
Did she upgrade to a cell phone? Did Nick
I
Fury
don't know.
upgrade to a cell phone?
I
Because
don't know, dude.
Infinity War seems to suggest that he didn't, but
But
I guess
also,
that's
let's talk about what they said about the Ten Rings, right? And this is a good tie-in. This is a good place to tie it into other pieces of Marvel media because that got me really excited because there's a couple of cool callbacks to this to the Ten Rings and other Marvel stuff that we're going to see, which is again, I'm excited about that. Okay, cool. So basically. They say so ba basically his Wenwu has had these rings for however long, no one knows. It's been like thousands of years, basically. And then Wong basically tells them that this thing is a beacon, it's sending a signal. We don't know where, but it is sending a signal at this point. And we know that it's the multiverse. So where could it be sending a signal? And then tie-in pieces of media, Miss Marvel, the bangle that she uses looks eerily similar to the Ten Rings. It really does. It could be the pair. I don't know. That's what it seems like to me. And the other thing, I think we talked about this when we were talking about Quantum Mania. Kang's multiversal engine thingy, he says, don't let him touch the rings. So I'm like, okay, something's going on with this. So now that gets me excited about where this is going and what role Shang-Chi has to play in the whole multiverse saga. I'm super excited for that. What do you think? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I am very curious as to who the signal is being sent to
Oh,
or
yeah.
what it's being sent to, because if Quantumania taught us anything, it's that unfortunately sending a signal, while maybe great in theory, is not always,
A good thing,
it doesn't
yeah.
always, yeah, it doesn't always turn out to be a great thing. But also, I think sometimes sending a signal is not a bad thing, because technically in, what was it, Infinity War?
Yep.
Was it Infinity War,
It was.
where they all the Avengers had like the pager that Fury used, and
Yep, that was Infinity War.
yeah, and so like that was the signal technically being transmitted, and we got Carol through that, so
Oh, yeah.
that was cool. But yeah, I'm very curious to see who the signal is being sent to or what it's being sent to and what the connection is to stuff that Marvel has already established. But it might take a few movies and or a couple phases to get there. But I'm willing to wait because the Infinity Saga was really cool and I think they pulled it
Yes.
off really well. So I'm excited to see what the Multiverse Saga turns out to be and like what's in store for
Absolutely.
us in upcoming phases. But yeah, I mean, again, I just didn't know a lot about Shang-Chi or the rings, and to be fair, I still feel like I don't know a lot now
No.
for the movie universe, but I think they're gonna build it up and it'll be really interesting to see where it goes. So I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely. That's the cool thing about the MCU, right? Because, like, even though this movie seems like it's just there in the timeline right now, I'm pretty sure that somewhere down the line we're gonna see something and be like, oh, that's what that meant, and we lose our minds. And that's what I'm looking forward to at this point, to be honest with
Yeah.
you. So again, another great addition to the MCU. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. It's really cool. And I think I love how Xu Xiaoling has taken over her father's empire to build something for herself now, which is again super cool. I want to see where that goes as well. Again, I am definitely looking forward to see who that signal is being sent to, or what it's being sent to, or what comes out of that. And again, like any MCU venture, it's been a ride, and I'm looking forward to seeing where this is gonna go. And with that, guys, we are ending our discussion of Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, but we are coming back next week with something a little bit different. So, Cass, tell our audience what we're coming up with next week, because it is a little bit different.
It's a little different than Shang-Chi, definitely. It's not a superhero movie, so if anybody's been tired of superhero movies in general and or us discussing them, it's not a superhero movie. But a couple weeks back, we did a live action Cinderella,
Yep.
and we thought it'd be fun, maybe, to compare
Maybe.
it to the was it 2021? It was 2021, right? Or
I
2022?
think it
I don't
was,
know,
I
but
don't remember. Oh my
either
God.
way, the Amazon
Prime
production of
version.
Cinderella, yeah, which actually had a really interesting cast, and I was kind of curious about, because it had like
Same.
Pierce Brosnan, Idina Menzel,
Idina
and
Menzel, Camila Cabello.
yeah, and like I feel like some other names I'm looking at the moment, but I mean the cast was, it seemed
Interesting.
promising, and it definitely piqued my interest. We'll find out whether or not the final product still kind of met our expectations next week. But yeah, we thought it would be kind of interesting just to go back and revisit another live action adaptation of what's probably a very beloved classic. So yeah, next week we're doing the Amazon production of Cinderella.
Absolutely. And guys, thank you so much for sticking around. If you've stuck around this far to listen to us rave and rant about this stuff, we love you. We really appreciate you. Give us some feedback. Let us know what you think in the comments, or send us asks on Instagram or Tumblr, anywhere. Our website links are in our description, and like I said, we would definitely love to hear from all of you. Thank you so much, and we will see you guys next week with Amazon's live action adaptation of Cinderella. Thank you.
Thank you. As always, our lovely theme song is Water Lily by the 126ers. The Nerdy Podcasts podcast is available on Anchor, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, and you can follow us online at nerdy-podcasts.tumblr.com or at nerdypodcasts.wordpress.com.